As a matter of fact, it was almost dinner time. I followed them up the stairs to the second story of the crematorium, where the prisoners lived. An enormous room, with comfortable bunks lining both walls. The bunks were made of unpainted wood, but on each one silk coverlets and embroidered pillows shone. This colorful, expensive bedding was completely out of keeping with the atmosphere of the place. It had not been made here, but left by members of earlier convoys who had brought it with them into captivity. The Sonderkommando was allowed to draw it from the storerooms and use it. The whole room was bathed in a dazzling light, for here they did not economize on electricity as they did in the barracks. Our way led between the long row of bunks. Only half the commando was present. The other half, about 100 men, was on the night shift. Some of those here were already in bed asleep, while others were reading. There were plenty of books to be had, for we Jews are a people who like to read. Each prisoner had brought some books with him, the number and type depending upon his level of intelligence and education. To have books and be able to read was yet another privilege granted to the Sonderkommando. In the Katzet, anyone caught reading was punished with 20 days solitary confinement in a sort of sentry box just large enough to stand up in, unless, of course, the blows dealt him beforehand had already killed him. The table awaiting us was covered with a heavy silk brocade tablecloth, fine initialed porcelain dishes, and place settings of silver, more objects that had once belonged to the deportees. The table was piled high with choice and varied dishes, everything a deported people could carry with them into the uncertain future. All sorts of preserves, bacon, jellies, several kinds of salami, cakes, and chocolate. From the labels, I noticed that some of the food had belonged to Hungarian deportees. All perishable foods automatically became property of the legal heirs of those who were still alive, that is, the Sonderkommando. Seated around the table were the capo in chief, the engineer, the head chauffeur, the commando leader, the tooth pullers, and the head of the gold smelters. Their welcome was most cordial. They offered me all they had, and there was an abundance of everything, for the Hungarian convoys continued to arrive at an ever-increasing rate, and they brought a great deal of food with them. And my interjection, it's very familiar, isn't it? This ability of class-conditioned humans to normalize insanity. Continuing. I found it difficult to swallow, however. I could not help thinking of my fellow sufferers who, before starting on their exodus, had gathered and prepared their provisions. They'd been hungry, but had refrained from eating during the entire trip, in order to save their meager rations for their parents, their children, and the more difficult times ahead. Only the more difficult times had never come. In the lobby of the crematorium, the food had remained untouched. I drank some tea spiked with rum. After a few glasses, I managed to relax. My mind cleared and freed itself of the unpleasant thoughts that had been plaguing it. A pleasant warmth penetrated me, the voluptuous effects of the alcohol comforting as the caress of a mother's hand. The cigarettes we were smoking had also been imported from Hungary. In the camp proper, a single cigarette was worth a ration of bread. Here on the table lay hundreds of packages. Our conversation grew more and more spirited. Poland, France, Greece, Germany, and Italy were represented around the table. Since most of us understood German, it served as our common language. From the conversation, I learned the history of the crematoriums. Tens of thousands of prisoners had built them of stone and concrete, finishing them in the middle of an extremely rigorous winter. Every stone was stained with their blood. They had worked day and night, often without food or drink, dressed in mere tatters, so that these infernal death factories, whose first victims they became, might be finished in time. Since then, 4 years had passed. Countless thousands had since climbed down from the boxcars and crossed the thresholds of the crematoriums. The present Sonderkommando was the 12th to bear the name. I learned the history of each preceding Sonderkommando, when it reigned, and who its heroes were. And I was reminded of a fact I already knew, that the Sonderkommando's lifespan was only a few months, at the most. Whoever among them practiced the Jewish faith could thus begin, on the day of his arrival, the purification ceremony in preparation for death. For death would come to him as surely as it had come to every member of all the preceding Sonderkommandos. It was almost midnight. The company assembled around the table was weary from the day's work and the evening's consumption of alcohol. Our conversation grew more and more listless. An SS making his rounds stopped to remind us that it was high time we were in bed. I took leave of my new companions and returned to my room. Thanks to the rum I had drunk and my tired nerves, I spent a relatively quiet first night.